Welcome to the Legal Moves Podcast. My name is Zachary Strubeck. I'm a California game lawyer, and I am the host of the show. This week, my guest is Dylan Jones, who runs The Game Nest. It's a game development co-working space in San Francisco. Welcome to the show, Dylan.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. So let's start off. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your background and your connection with game development in general outside of The Game Nest?
Yeah, totally. So I think like a lot of us in the industry over here, we just started making games when we were really young and we just kept doing it. And that's pretty much the story right there, right? It's nice and quick. But yeah, you know, and back in the day, right, there were a couple of tools like Torque, you know, back, you know, when I was in high school or whatever it was and just started making stuff then. Made a bunch of weird, funky, experimental indie games, kind of continued some of that in college, worked here and there at some internships, and then moved on from that. Actually tried to do an MMO in the Crysis Engine for like a corporation, not my own indie game. I definitely tried to stay away from the MMOs, which is funny because that's kind of what I'm working on these days. And just kept making weird, funky, experimental stuff, did the corporate game jobs. I kind of consider myself these days as like a game systems designer. And yeah, still just trying to make stuff work, right? I pay that expensive rent in San Francisco by making games.
Yeah, there's a reason why I don't live in San Francisco.
Well, it could be me and you both real soon. Yeah.
Right. Well, tell me a little bit about The Game Nest in general. Where is it? When did it start?
So Game Nest is an inclusive co-working space, right, in like downtown San Francisco. Funnily enough, it's next to like kind of, it's in the same neighborhood with all the startups and stuff, but we consider ourselves very much not a startup or anything like that. It's supposed to be a safe space where game developers can come and basically discuss their craft. Right. They can come and from any point in a project, start getting it out there. What we had found, and one of the reasons why we made Game Nest, right, is we have all these incredible, talented people all over the Bay Area and California and all this jazz. Yep. But we all work from home. Right. All the founders. So it's me, Yanaman, Danielle and Jim. We all, you know, we were all working from home. We heard the story from everybody saying we all work from home. Wouldn't it be great if we could join, you know, something like Glitch City? Which is down in LA, which is a co-working space. And so we said, yeah, you know, maybe San Francisco would be the perfect spot for that. Mm-hmm. And so we liked getting that feedback. We liked doing that stuff and kind of working within proximity, right? Having like a large studio environment or a mid-sized studio environment, but keeping it all indie, all individual projects. And the other kind of pillar that Game Nest stands for is it's an event space, right? So in San Francisco, it's not a bad problem to have at all, of course, but there are a lot of different pockets of game development all over, from indies to AAAs to mobile to whatever it is, and even different indie groups, because it's just too large for everybody to show up at one bar. Right. And so there were all these different places. And so we said, well, wouldn't it be cool if we could kind of have like one roof for all of these game developers to come? And very similar to other, you know, there's Chicago and there's LA and stuff, but very similar to other places, if we can have friends from out of town or GDC parties, you know, and have that one consolidated place where we can all come together and talk about our craft and do that stuff, whether it's over beers or hanging out playing games. That was kind of where Game Nest came to be. It was just about hope, basically. And then we kind of all started to form together during IndieCade, basically, and we said, oh, well, let's do it. And then the day after IndieCade, it got back and started looking at spaces, and it just grew from there, turned into a much bigger thing. Originally, it was just going to be, oh, I don't know, like five or six of us, and now I think we can house like up to 35 or 40. We have about 25, it's probably up to like 30 people these days, members that come in. We have full-time memberships and part-time memberships, so it's usually like 10, 15, 20 developers in the actual, we call it the Great Hall at Game Nest over there, working every day. Yeah. And there, I don't know, there's lots of history and San Francisco zoning and real estate issues and problems like that, but it was a totally lucky spot. We got a really great deal on it. Yeah.
Awesome. So, well, let me ask you, how does the membership situation work? So you have full-time members and you have part-time members. Explain it a little bit.
Yeah, well, you pretty much just summed it up right there. I mean, we have a full-time membership. One of the things that what we think is a really great service, and which is totally different than any other co-working space around San Francisco, surely, is that you can come in and you can actually leave your monitor and your full desktop set up at your desk. A lot of co-working spaces, at least in the city over here, make you wipe off all your desk at the end of the day and all that jazz. But we just say leave it all here. So that's like the full-time membership. Mm-hmm. Then part-time membership is you could come in for a couple of days or whatever and you pop your laptop down and hang out and have a good time. And then we also have events memberships. So that's basically just like come into our, you know, we'll have events like play testing feedback Friday, and you can swing by there, or, you know, other cool, we do this party, you know, out of the shell that's open to all the public and stuff. We do a bunch of just large public events, but yeah, our more intimate events, we have an events membership, but really all of those things just go into supporting the space. The rent in San Francisco is absolutely ridiculous. We are so far away from any kind of profit of repaying back our initial investment. All these things really just go into making the Game Nest stay afloat, which is awesome. And it's been really humbling to see that kind of great response and things like that.
Just wait until this podcast gets out there. I mean, I'm sure your membership will skyrocket.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's great. You mentioned some other people. Michelle, I didn't, you mentioned three other people. Who are they, and how are they connected? Are you all partners in running the Game Nest?
Yeah, so it's Yanaman and Danielle and Jim, and we're all founders. We're all co-founders of Game Nest. And that was, you know, we're all just a bunch of motivated people. We all had a similar vision. We were all crazy enough to spend many months of our lives trying to find a spot for this and repairing the floors and retouching it and organizing and all that stuff like that. And so, yeah, we plopped some money down to make it happen. So there's four of us. I am on a game lawyer podcast, so I will point out that it is just a humble little LLC, and we are all co-founders of the LLC.
That's better than nothing, believe me.
Partnership. We have a, we even have a shared bank account with a credit union for all this stuff. Great. And we try and keep the books semi-clean, but yeah.
I hope they're clean, but that, again, that's not my job. That's the
clean isn't organized. Yes. Definitely. Right. We are very far on the spectrum of within the law. It was funny because I mentioned it earlier, but there was in San Francisco, there, as I'm sure is the case, but there are a bunch of different types of zoning laws. Right. And it's like kind of a, real estate in San Francisco is kind of like a classic headache. Yep. So we were honestly really careful to play it by the book and to play it by these issues, because there's this whole tech scene in San Francisco that's coming in, and that are abusing a lot of the policies, turning old nice Victorian houses into accelerators and things like that. And
like, so on, not only Silicon Valley, if you've seen that, I think that was one of the episodes.
Yep, totally. Yep. Right, exactly. Yep. And that's a very real thing, right? Like, that show covers a lot of ironies. But sometimes when you're in San Francisco, you can only cringe because of how true some of those analogies really are. So we really wanted to be not only grouped into that, to avoid being grouped into that, for, you know, personal reasons. But of course, people, you know, there are a bunch of government folks who are rightfully out to try and find some of that stuff. So we're trying to play it all by the book and really, you know, only set up shop and properly zone things and deal with proper signage and all those little tiny details. You know, it's funny. We originally did this and we're like, oh, great, we're going to save so much time. You know, we won't need to wander around or go to different co-working spaces and all that jazz. Like, it won't be that bad. It'll be pretty much self-sufficient. But like any project or game, for that matter, the scope always blows out and the time always blows out. So it's been a wild ride. It's been crazy. It's definitely had its ups and its downs, but it's been amazing so far.
Awesome. So are there any plans to expand outside of San Francisco to LA? I don't know. Where the big – a lot of the people I work with, they're sort of dispersed across the U.S. and across the world. So
totally. It was funny because when we were first trying to name this place – we were, you know, thinking of like, oh, is it cool, like a lighthouse, like a beacon or something like that? And you said, oh, SF Lighthouse, whatever. And we're like, oh, well, we don't want to call it just SF Lighthouse or whatever, right? Because what if we want to open up another spot in Oakland or open up another spot? But these days, it's just simply so much work to even maintain the one spot we have. I'm sure we would love to stretch outwards, or the very least, you know, we do everything we always can to encourage other people. Chris is opening up one up in Seattle and stuff like that. So we're always trying to encourage and open our books, all that jazz for that. But in terms of opening new locations, I cannot comment on that. There are no plans currently, because it is simply just been so much work so far. Yeah. Again, Game Nest, you know, it's a co-working. We're all game developers at heart. So our full-time thing is making games. And then, so this is, or was supposed to be, a secondary thing. Yeah.
Has it become sort of your primary thing?
No, it hasn't been a primary thing. I don't think for anybody yet, but it's definitely been, it feels like, is there an in-between between a primary and a secondary thing? And whatever that is, that's what it is. Yeah.
Tertiary? Is that
maybe? Well, I think tertiary is third.
The third, yeah.
So it's, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should edit that out.
That's fine. So,
do you have any corporate sponsors or game industry sponsors or anything like that? Like people that maybe help or mentor the developers that are there?
Yeah. So Well, mentor and sponsor are two very different things,
okay.
Right?
Let's start with sponsors, and then
So sponsors, no, we don't, okay. And that's been a very conscious choice of ours to keep it as independent and free and away from corporate branding and responsibilities as we possibly can, and really, you know, kind of provide. I say, you know, we're the founders, whatever, but really, the goal is to just give it to the community and just have them own it, and we don't want anybody, including ourselves or the community, having to deal with relationships. From that, just truly to be independent. Now that, of course, brings its own challenges, right? We're trying to survive off what we charge is very cheap at cost rent. It's literally less than half the price of other even the other cheaper co-working spaces. And because of that, you know, there's a lot of startups around here, whatever it is, and we get applications. We have to be very, very stern in saying, well, actually, we just want to grow this small. We want to grow this with a diverse community and with, you know, a really solid game, very much game, indie game focused community. We haven't logged on to any of the sponsors. In terms of mentorship, you know, really the Game Nest and especially San Francisco, I think in general, has attracted just this huge breadth of talent. It really is a privilege and an honor to spend the days with some of these really smart folks. I think we all have our own little individual mentors that we talk to, you know, whether that's our colleagues or our friends all there, or really more of a family, as cliche as it may sound, right? The mentorships, I think, are different for everybody, right? That you can align yourself if you're mobile. You know, we have some mobile legends over there. If you're all about interactive stories, we have some truly award-winning game developers over there who can help you with that and that kind of stuff. You kind of, you know, it's indie, right? So you find what you want, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you make it work, right?
Okay. So is there any kind of, aside from just paying the membership fees for the monthly access to the space, is there any kind of royalty deal or ownership of the game? I know that I work with a client who is in a game development accelerator now, and they take a portion of the revenue that comes in from it. Is there any kind of deal like that, or is that something that you're considering?
I'm not at this time. Absolutely not. So that's never been anywhere near the table for us. We just want to make sure that indie game developers can keep making awesome indie games. Right. So for us, if we just charge a very low for San Francisco, fee to come in, I've worked with accelerators and I've worked with that stuff in the past. And I think there's like this really unfortunate, it's very much not, those have their place and they're great. I've done projects with that before, but that is very much not, certainly not what the Game Nest is. It's much more of, you know, that's more of an accelerator. This is a co-working space, right? This is, we're all in this together. We're all just hanging out. We're all separate, but we're all united, if you will. Yeah. Right.
Agreed. Well, and it's funny. I think that when you introduce that into the relationship, there becomes maybe a little push toward getting them to release the game and start making money, or maybe it changes the purity of the game itself, right?
Oh, the purity, the dynamics, it's all. I mean, that's truly running a whole different. I mean, that's getting into investment territory and all that jazz, and you're like, oh, now you got to hound people on deadlines and that kind of stuff. Yep. I'm like, nobody in there is keeping track of their own deadlines, right? That's definitely very far from what it is. Ideally, you know, we can maybe start, you know, what we've done in the past is we have scholarships and we start getting people in there and doing stuff like that at no cost for them. And that I could maybe see is the closest we'll get to, that's really not close to taking any money at all. I guess that's just kind of giving money away, but No, I don't see us taking any money from anybody anytime soon, besides from just trying to keep those lights on over there with a monthly little help stipend thing. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I've thought about doing something similar to, I guess, what an accelerator does, where I'll do work for free for clients, because a lot of, you know, indie developers just don't have the money to pay a lawyer. So I do work for free, but then I get a royalty off of their, you know, when their game releases. However, well, we have ethical rules about that because, again, it introduces a conflict of interest into the whole thing, right? Now I have more of a vested interest in getting them to release a game and may have it make money so that they can start paying me. And that may or may not go against, you know, my advice as a lawyer. So I generally don't do that.
Oh, interesting. Sure.
Yeah, I don't want that poisoning anything. And I don't want there to be any even implication that, you know, I'm not looking out for their best interests.
Right. And so I would say we're probably even like encouraging the opposite. We're probably encouraging like, look, next week we'll have another feedback Friday. Take your time, polish it up, get back to us and stuff. I mean, it's nice because it's like any social element, right? You feel more responsible when you say, well, I'm working on this thing and I'm hoping to have it done by next week. Now, even just being in the space, right? Even just being there, somebody's going to ask you, hey, how's that feature going? And you're like, oh crap, I didn't finish that. Or you're like, oh, I better do a late night tonight and try and hit that deadline. But we're very much of, there are of course people in there making, again, diverse titles, right? So we have people who are strong into free to play, but we also have, you know, some of the better narrative writers in the industry over there, right? It's definitely a breadth of stuff, and I like to think that it just encourages taking your time and working on it.
Right. So how do you help? So suppose someone comes in and they haven't published a game before. They're just sort of working on their first game. Do you have maybe some structured workshops or anything like that, that you're sort of teaching them the ropes? How do you get the first game finished? Because I've done some surveys recently, and I've been looking at what game developers are finding to be their biggest challenges. And, well, one of the big ones is getting things finished, right?
Sure.
What do you do to help that?
Getting anything finished is always the ultimate goal, right? And the ultimate challenge for that matter. Yeah, we have a ton of workshops. So some of that, like the events membership that's really cheap, it's like $30 a month or whatever it is, talks a lot about that. So I know you were over there and you were kind enough to come in and offer your services, or not services rather, but information.
Yeah, exactly.
Always just do a talk. Not free legal advice or whatever it is that you can't give out. But, offer your services. We have a bunch of people, whenever we have devs from out of town, they say, oh, like, how are you working on this project? And we do a lot of postmortems and stuff like that. There's a bunch of little events like that. One of the nice things as well is we have people in there who have just graduated, and they're working on their first game. And we have people in there who have been doing it for 20 years, right? Of course, we do have an application process, and that is to keep the crazies out. We want to make sure that this is an inclusive and safe space, right? And so to maintain that and to keep that diversity up, we always, it's not like there's just like 30 randoms in here. It is 30 people that, everybody's kind of thinks it's definitely not a friend club, but it's definitely something that says, look, this person really cares more. Maybe they just moved here and they want to get more involved with meetups, or they've shown interest, or they haven't launched a ton of games before, but look how dedicated they are. Most importantly, it's about passion, right? And so it's a very passionate group of people over there.
That's good. Do you do just a written application, or do you have them actually talk to you? I mean, do you want to hear that passion in the way that they talk? Or
yeah, we have a very simple little keep the crazies out little Google Doc, basically. We don't want any gamer gators or stuff like that, right? And so we ask these questions, we look for red flags, and we have people come in and say hi. But I mean, really, we do monthly parties, we have all these events all the time, we have a bunch of public events. I also run the Unity meetups, and so I have a bunch of playtesting stuff over there, like for larger groups and meetups over there. And basically people who want to get involved just show up, right? Like anything in life, they just show up, and usually by then it's very rarely an issue. We just go, oh yeah, that person's awesome or whatever.
Okay. Very cool. So actually, how long have you been, I don't know if I asked you this before, but how long ago did you start
gaming? Yeah, not that long. I think it was a couple months ago. We had our 6 month, we're not out of business yet party is what it was called. So we have some great posters up on the wall, and we have a pretty, not sizable, but we have a pretty good community showing up, but we definitely, we're still, despite those 7 months, it goes by so quickly, so we still have some white walls here and there, and we're still like figuring out stuff, but I'm not sure that ever goes away, right?
Well, do you have a section for like when someone ships a game, you stick their game up there or something like that to celebrate that kind of thing?
Yeah, totally. We have a bunch of posters, and we always have parties whenever we ship a game. I mean, of course, games take a long time, so we've only had so many parties come out, but or launch parties or whatever we call them, right? But yeah, we have a bunch of posters and things up like that, and we like have cake. Actually, we have cake like almost every week because Jen Sandercock started that started that trend over there. But we also have cake and parties for when games launch. Again, like, one of the nice things about this co-working space, right, is that it's all focused around game development, right? So everybody in there has that ultimate empathy for launching a game and finishing something. It's not a startup co-working space where you can whip out a minimal viable product in 2 months or whatever, and you're good to go on your VC funding or whatever, right? It is, right. Everybody in there knows the struggles, and everybody in there is so excited to celebrate it with everybody else, right? It's great to celebrate those things as a group. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the people, are they usually, what is the skill set of the average Game Nest?
Happy to say that it's, I don't think there is an average. I think it's okay. All totally diverse from, again, free-to-play developers, to narrative writers, to artists, to designers, to people even making physical games, right? And people making world games and stuff like that. I really, if I think of who the average Game Nest, what career path is, I think that that pie chart's pretty even, to be honest. It's great. Okay. Yeah.
Do you have any board game developers come in there? I work with a lot of board game developers, so
that's cool. Yeah. Actually, I don't know if we have any like full time board game people, but I know we've definitely had plenty of people join in. Not only even just during like game gen and stuff like that, but just come in, and again, we have like day passes, and we have, you know, whenever you're swinging by, you know, it's free the first time, and right. it's all good. Really, again, it's just all these things are to keep the lights on, basically. Right. Yeah, but we have a bunch of board game developers come in, and we play their games and talk about it and all that jazz. Yeah, it's cool. It's a big thing. We also have in San Francisco, we have this large, basically like art and game festival called Come Out and Play. So they run a bunch of crazy events that are really fun. Like actually just coming up next week, I think they run this giant game called Journey, and thousands of people show up in San Francisco, and there are like 10 designated running zombies, and you run around San Francisco trying to get scavenger hunts and complete your missions and stuff, and you're getting literally chased down by marathon runners. You're going up and down the hills of San Francisco and stuff. So anyway, they plan that stuff out of there. So it really is a breadth and diverse amount of game creators, right?
Awesome. Yeah, San Francisco is great for that. I one of my other episodes, I had three creators on who do sort of reality-based games. One guy is based out of San Francisco. His name is Shannon Bruzelius. He runs Foxhound Urban Adventures, which does a Jericho game.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah. I was there last week. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. So, he's pretty involved, I think, in Come Out and Play. And I had a few other guys who work for Scrap, I think is the name of the company. But they do escape rooms, things like that.
So yeah, that's super some of those exciting. Around. Yeah.
That's why I like this podcast. It lets me talk to people who are maybe sort of on the fringes, not the totally. Usual, you know, games media people.
Yeah, the kind of people this kind of that work. Bring your own Nerf gun, you know, is a very regular phrase, you know. Yep. That's great. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting. So do you so have you heard of, there's something called a Protospiel or that kind of thing? I know that they have them in the Bay Area. Another one of my former guests, Jeremy Commander, he runs Protospiel out there. And it's basically where a bunch of board game developers will come in with their prototypes and everyone can just sort of play each other's games. It seems like kind of an interesting thing. Maybe that a game co-working space could have like a board game weekend or something like that. It seems like
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, I actually haven't ever brought a board game to one of those, but I have heard of it. Yeah, I mean we do a bunch of stuff like that. Yeah, I think traditionally I guess there are probably more video game developers at Game Nest than board game developers. But yeah, we do that stuff all the time. We do have a weekly board game session, and sometimes people bring in their stuff and things like that. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I saw that you had, when I was there, you had Exploding Kittens there and some other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They just showed up. Yeah.
Yeah, we have all different kinds of stuff. Very good. Yeah.
So how do you advertise? Are you just web-based or do you...
Great question. We're still figuring that out, right?
Okay. No, yeah, well, that's understandable. Me and I am also doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I think particularly in the indie scene, right, is like word travels fast. So what we've just tried to do so far is make a fun space and have the people that are in there tell their friends. And that's all we've been doing so far. I mean, we have a Twitter. It's @ Game Nest if you want to follow along. But honestly, yeah, it's just totally word of mouth. We haven't, I mean, we throw parties. We had Lost Levels, which is a big GDC unconference there last year. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you know, we do just a bunch of indie events and stuff like that. And honestly, you know, it's just like having a good time and providing for the community, and eventually people notice. And we've been really just privileged to benefit from that.
Right. Well, I think that's the big thing. The more you give, the more people take notice, and they start to give back by
giving you business. It's so easy to give when you're having a fun time, right? And you genuinely care about the space and the industry and these things. So
I feel the same way. I mean, that's why I write my blog. It's not really necessary, but I love writing it, and it makes it easy. It doesn't feel like work, which is
right.
And how work should ultimately feel, right?
This is how I should be doing it.
Yeah. Awesome. Let me look at my list of questions. I think we've actually reached the end of my questions. So, do you have any topics that you like to talk about that you think that people should know, developers out there?
Sure. I guess if I had to just mention one thing here and there, would just be, you know, I didn't realize it, right? But I was working at home, and I work with a team all around the world over Skype and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really realize kind of how lonely it was. And I consider myself a pretty sociable guy, right? So I have plenty of friends that come and check on me and stuff like that. But when you're making a game, when you're in the trenches like that, right? Yep. It's so refreshing. It sounds like overly positive, right? But I didn't really know what I was missing. With, you know, now that we have this great community space there. So if I had to give a shout out, wherever you are, whether it's in the States or around the world or in San Francisco or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Really get out there and maybe see, even if you can just work with a buddy or a friend at a coffee shop or something like that, you never really know how much that can re-energize you into your project, right? And for your own mental capability. There's really, I've only seen benefits of it so far, is you feel mentally much better. And honestly, I think your game is, or whatever project you're working on, is better 10 times fold, right? Because you're getting all these feedback, even at the earliest stages to the latest stages.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm in a similar situation. I'm traveling all the time, and I'm usually working out of the Regis. It's like a co-working space, I guess. It's basically a big room with a bunch of desks, and there's other business folk in there. They're not game developers or lawyers or anything like that. But, you know, it's nice to just sort of be in an environment where other people are doing business and you're not at home in your pajamas. Right. You know, you have to actually get up, you get dressed, you walk out of the house, and I don't know, it feels, even if you're, you know, you have the ability to work from home, it's generally not the best idea, just because.
Yeah. I know there's a bunch of indies out there that go, yeah, okay, but like, it's not really worth the money or the time or whatever it is. You know, like, if I'm just doing my own thing, why even commute or whatever it is? But wow, I've just really seen such a difference. And it's the same story I hear from people, not only at GameNest, but just in general, just like, it actually really does make a difference. So if you're listening to this by chance and you're like, wow, why commute or why go back from home? Well, maybe just give it a try for a month and see what you think. I really do encourage you to check it out. Yeah. And the other thing I guess I would say is, if one of these isn't in your neighborhood, go out and make it, right? None of us were qualified to do anything about this, right? Like, we just went to the city government and said, do you have any tips for like a local business? And they were awesome, right? And again, San Francisco, I think, is arguably, I think we just passed New York for the most expensive rent on a median average there. So
it's pretty crazy.
If you can do it, if we can do it in San Francisco, despite the work, I think anybody listening can absolutely do it. I mean, again, I just like spent a month basically looking for spaces. I found GameNest after, God, literally a month of visiting houses and, you know, office spaces like four times a week and probably going to like three or four spots every single one of those days. And eventually I was just trolling Craigslist, and the only photo on this, again, office real estate, 3,000 square feet, was a cell phone picture of a computer screen that was then displaying a Google Maps image of Street View. Wow. Right? That was the only thing on there. And I said, well, this is either going to be the worst place.
It sounds like you're going to go there and get murdered.
Right. So it's like, I'm either going to die, or this is going to end up being the perfect place, right? Because it's the only thing that we can maybe actually afford. And it turns out that that was the only place that we could actually afford, and I didn't get murdered. So, you know, we signed then, right? So it's just, it's classic advice, but boy, does it work, right? You just keep trying. You just keep experimenting and seeing what's going on. And eventually it really does work out with enough persistence on there. But the last thing that I could possibly try and convey is, if you don't have a space like this and you're like, wow, that sounds really cool, go out and make it. Please tweet at me. I'm TDJ, like the Dylan Jones, which is my blog over there. And I will be happy to open our books to you. I will be happy to, although everybody over here will be totally happy to give you any and all tips for setting this stuff up. But really, there is no manual here, and unfortunately, it'll be really different for everybody. But at the same high-level stuff, just go out and do it, and you'll totally reap the benefits of it.
Yeah, we should really have a discussion about trademarking the Game Nest name and doing some, you know, licensing that out to other people to, you know, get the brand going.
Sure,
that's one way to do things like that. And I don't know, maybe if one of your competitors is listening, that's a viable strategy if you want to go nationwide with your brand.
But, I think the nice thing about games, right, is it's like why entertainment survives the Great Depression, right? So even when nobody has any money, everybody's still going to the movies to enjoy themselves. It's the same thing with games. Like, I totally understand, you know, like, oh, our the competition or whatever it is, but I cannot name a single competitor that we have, right? Like, there's just no, I mean, even when the opposite of us, right, like Microsoft is rumoring to be opening up a co-working space or whatever it is, and they approached me and said, is this okay? Are we going to do this, whatever? And I'm like, look, if we have more co-working spaces, we have more game developers making great stuff, and we all have more games to play. It's really, nobody at Game Nest ever views anything as any kind of competition or something like that. If somebody wants to reach out to us and say, hey, we'd love to, you know, exchange ideas and maybe use the logo or whatever it is, let's chat, let's do it about it. But I think the other thing is just encouraging people, you know, believe me, by the end of all that work you're going to do, I'm sure you're going to want to name your baby your own thing, and it's totally well deserved and stuff like that. Absolutely. So I mean, all those trademarking and nice things that we should be doing, as I'm sure your listeners know from this podcast here. But really, it's just about encouraging people to make cool stuff. And that's all. That's our main priority, for better or worse, for that is.
Yes. Course. Good. But, yeah. No, that's good. So is there any, a lot of the developers that are there, are they looking to do Kickstarters or anything like that to try to raise some funds for their games? Or are they basically bootstrapping them, and or do they have full-time jobs otherwise, and they're just sort of doing this part-time?
All the above, absolutely. Just like the indie-making community and all the stories you hear, that it's represented in Game Nest. We have people on publishers. We have people who are bootstrapping. We have people who have huge successes. We have people looking for funding. It's all of the above, yeah. And that's great, because you get to exchange all these different ideas about why everything is broken, right? And hopefully how to fix it. We, you know, try and have productive conversations.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, I mean, that seems like one of the biggest benefits of being amongst a bunch of other developers is that, you know, whenever you encounter a problem, you basically have people on hand to be able to help you with it, or at least brainstorm some ideas on how to fix it. Right.
Absolutely. And that's as low level as I have this weird bug in Unity and I've spent an hour Googling it. Oh, let me just ask somebody in the space or post in our internal Slack, right? And having that fixed. Well, that's as high level as, oh, look, you know, I'm thinking about making a VR game. What do we all think about the market? And we can all talk about that, you know? It's mind-boggling how many little tiny moments are in the day like that, where you're thinking about this and you're like, wow, really, how is this UI better than what it used to be, you know, in that last revision? Let me ask my neighbor, or whatever it is. All those things just start to emerge, and you start to get more and more in the mindset of that community. And actually, that takes a little bit of time. You know, when new members join, they're super, super quiet, you know, and that's all. And that's fine for a month or whatever it is. But then as things go on, you start to be like, oh, you know, what do you think? Whatever it is. And then everybody just turns to be friends. And now you're just making fun of each other's stuff all the time. You know? And that's, you know, then you go full circle, of course.
Right. Well, when I came, everyone was very friendly. Everyone looked like they were happy, which was good.
I'm happy to hear that. Yeah.
And they all had a ton of questions, but their questions were sort of based in being knowledgeable about this stuff. So it was good. It was good to see a lot of people had this base of knowledge about indie game development, the business side of things, which was good.
Great. Oh, that surprises me.
Well, it does, huh?
In that category. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, well, and this is something I'd be interested in. Yeah, just sort of doing regular workshops or something like that with people that are at the Game Nest or even other places. I think it's important that, you know, you sort of remember, well, for a lot of people, and especially people who are paying to be at the Game Nest, it's a business for them, right? They're looking to eventually release something and make money. You know, but paying attention to those business issues from the beginning, I think, is super important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially, I talk about this on this podcast all the time, but you need to start building a community of fans for your game, even when it's sort of in the embryonic stages, right? Because when you want to go and raise money or anything, getting discovered in an app store or even on Steam, I mean, it's super difficult just because there's so many
games. Totally. And that's our... I think with a lot of indie game developers, right, talking about discoverability and the tips and tricks behind that are arguably in the forefront of everybody's mind all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So
we definitely try and cover that one. But the other thing is, like, there is no, like you're saying, right, there is no perfect fix for that. There is no solution. We just keep talking about it and seeing what works, right? And that's great, because the other day, you know, oh my gosh. I was talking to somebody who's like, oh, well, what if I did this? And like, oh, well, you know, we did that for a couple of months, and it was actually, we thought it was kind of overrated. And I went, oh my gosh, you totally just saved me like 2 months. Like, 'cause that's what I was going to do. So yeah,
the benefits of having people around who totally have made the same mistakes. Do you want to talk about your relationship with Unity? I know that you run the Unity meetup group. And I spoke at it, you know, invited by you. Is there any sort of relationship between Game Nest and Unity, or is it just you personally?
No, there's no relationship there. I run the largest Unity meetups, actually, and so we have like around 150, 200 Unity developers show up. I usually host those at Unity or at Game Nest and stuff like that. And we do, I've like consulted for Unity before and stuff like that, but it's certainly an unpaid position at all, but it's just, again, there to help the community and to help. I've been doing that for a couple of years, and there wasn't a lot of really consistent, great Unity support. And so I just said, well, once again, you know, this was before Game Nest. I was like, well, let's just build it, right? Let's just do it.
Right.
And now it's turned into a good public saying there. But just actually today, or yesterday, rather, I was cleaning it today, Unity, I helped host, you know, a giant roadshow there for, you know, how to make Unity games and network and stuff like that, like actually networking in the game. And so, yeah, we host that at Game Nest. We do have corporate, you know, help come in and explain games, right? So we had Facebook last week come in and talk about how to port your game into WebGL, if that's something that interests you, to get it on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we do have some corporate people come in and share their tips, right? But we stay very far away from come in and learn about, you know, watch an info commercial, right? We want it to be all pretty right. Quality content. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want someone just sort of pitching their product, right?
Yeah, no, that's not what the space is for sure. Yeah.
So what I wanted to ask you before is, did you read this? There was an article recently about the indie apocalypse and how it's just sort of, the bubble is bursting on indie games, right? There's too many games out there and it's just impossible to discover any. What do you think about that? Do you have an opinion on that?
Is it cool, yeah.
Overblown,
so
it's
a little bit of a tangent from co-working spaces, but I think this is a great issue and with something we definitely talk about. So yeah, the indie apocalypse right now, right? So I think there is this unfortunate lull between the platforms right now. We've seen each of these markets kind of mature. I know a bunch of indies jumped onto the mobile thing and that was great for a while, but now you have to be a pretty big spender in terms of like user acquisition and all that jazz to really dominate that space. Steam also opened its floodgates, right? So there is this point right now where, yes, I do think discoverability is not broken, but certainly at a point where it is abnormally difficult. That being said, right, it's indie apocalypse makes it kind of sound like it's all been boiling up and it's there's now this perfect storm here. But really, I mean, I'm not sure. Is it really that much harder than it was 8 years ago or whatever? You know, like when I was first wandering around GDC or whatever 8-9 years ago, and it was, you know, still really hard, right? Like you had to go on. I was just talking to Alex Austin about this, right? But you had to like get somebody to go onto your website and like take out a credit card and then buy your game.
Right.
Like these are all just different problems that we have, and we'll adapt. So yes, I think that there is this point, the sweet spot right now, where we don't have any necessarily emerging platforms. There are, of course, like VR, which is just starting up, and there's this great moment there. But really, in terms of making VR games, I have a bunch of friends doing all these awesome Vive projects, but they certainly get supported by the big guys, in which case I think that kind of puts you in like a less risk situation. But in terms of betting your business, right, you kind of, honestly, you're betting it maybe on like whether a website like Facebook can ship a bunch of hardware, or what Sony will do, kind of winning with the Morpheus on the early game and then seeing, well, do your games really, are they going to keep selling the end game there? I think there are so many mysteries to that market right now. I think it's still this massive risk, but I know a lot of great people who are like, okay, well, so be it. Let's build the metaverse. Let's go for it, right? But I don't think there's a platform right now that is really beneficial for indies, which is unfortunate, but I think hopefully somebody will come up with some great stuff.
Well, I think, yeah, no matter what, across the board, eventually you're going to have to face the fact that you need to do your own marketing, right? Or hire someone to do it for you. Because, I mean, yeah, the example you pointed out is, you know, 8-10 years ago, you still had to get people to come to your website. You still had to somehow advertise to them. They're not just going to show up and find you on the internet. I mean, there may have been like little bumps, like when Kickstarter first launches and there's only a handful of projects, right?
Right.
People will probably discover you.
And that market has also now totally matured.
Yeah, you know, and now, you know, unless you're super special, you're not going to be on the front page of Kickstarter. So you need to do that work yourself.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be on the front page of Kickstarter unless you made a successful game 20 years ago. It was basically like
Yeah, or you show up at the Sony press conference or something like that, right?
Right. Well, that's a whole different interesting thing, right, on another tangent. But I think, actually, Andrew Pellerano, who was in GameNest, published this great article. We were thinking pretty much along the same lines, but, like, is E3 just going to turn into this never-ending, like, okay, well, here's a bunch of Kickstarters, right? Yeah. And you, the fans, go and back whatever you want. And, you know, it's this great, like, there's finally a direct ROI return, right, on pitching games at E3 to see, you know, if Vote for Your Wallet really stands up there.
Right. That's so weird to me. I mean, I can't even imagine. It's almost like the year before, or maybe it was 2 years before that, when they had all those indie games up at the Sony PS4 announcement, right? And it's sort of a new thing to have all these super indie games up there. But then, you know, now it's like you're featuring Kickstarters and what's next? I don't know. It's a weird time for indie development. I mean, I don't know if I would call Shenmue 3 indie development, but just game development in
general. Well, I mean, you know, indie development is also flexible, right? So I know, especially in San Francisco, we have this whole thing with a lot of, I mean, this is a very complicated issue, so I don't mean to umbrella it or generalize it at all, but basically we have some very large tech companies with some large paychecks coming in and buying up rooms and basically just making the city more expensive for all these really great creative artists and where they go and stuff. And so, I mean, it was really funny because the other day I was talking to who I view as of five good indie game friends. And I realized that everybody for now kind of had these corporate jobs and they were still doing indie stuff on the side, but it was this kind of eye-opening experience for me where I was like, wow, all, you know, some of these in this particular group, right, it's people are getting corporate jobs and doing stuff on the side. And I think that's a forever in flux. So maybe right now, as we have this lull of discoverability, maybe we go off and get corporate jobs and come back to it all. But boy, wouldn't it be nice to keep making the games we want to make, right?
Well, you go get the corporate jobs, so you make some money so you can pay someone to advertise for you, right, and get your
indie project done. Yeah, that always sounds good on paper, right? But like very few of us, not including myself, can save enough money to actually pay like another programmer or like another artist or something, right?
Yeah, I hear you.
And like just save up enough so that we can have a year of runway for ourselves or whatever it is. And maybe that's fine for some folks, but I know some folks can't do quite everything. So it's a crazy world out there for those indies. But if anybody's gonna survive it, it's gonna be the indies.
So yeah, I think so. Yes.
Yeah.
But the good thing is that there's places like Game Nest to help those indies get their games finished and get something done, right?
Yeah, we like to think so. Yeah. And again, if you hear about Game Nest on this podcast here, please swing by anytime. Come to some parties and stuff like that. It's an open place for game developers.
Yeah. Like I said, I was there. Everyone was super nice and welcoming. So, yeah.
Well, that's very kind.
It's a great place to go. So that's going to wrap up this episode. Dylan, why don't you tell our listeners everywhere they can find you? Twitter, blogs, whatever you got.
That sounds great. Yeah, well, again, thanks for having me on here. This is a treat. If I had to do any final plugs, I would just say go out there and try out your local co-working space. If you don't have one, go out and make one, I would say. If you have any questions about it, yeah, hit me up on Twitter. I'm at TDJ. Again, it's just like TDJ, like the Dylan Jones, which is also my blog. I have a bunch of stuff on there about industry and a bunch of technical stuff and design things and analytics and stuff like that that you can use to really kind of help your creative sides and things like that. But that's over at thedylanjones.com. thedylanjones.com.
Very cool. All right. And you can find me at gamelawyerblog.com. You can read about legal issues in game development. Make sure you go on iTunes and review this show. Those reviews really help. And you don't even have to write anything. Just click the 5 stars and you're good. Okay.
Click those yes. 5 stars. Help out another indie. There you go. Exactly. Share that love.
Yep. Yep. I'm an indie game lawyer. So yeah, I totally definitely need the help too. Absolutely. All right. I will see you all on the next episode.
Hey, thanks so much, Zach. Good luck, everybody. Keep making those awesome games. Looking forward to playing them.
Awesome.